Hey guys, welcome back to Kyle Burrell's Unedited Podcast, episode number 127. Lots to discuss. We get in ending of the college basketball regular season, nearing conference tournaments. We got to talk about UFC 299 this coming weekend. What a card. Maybe the most stacked card of all time. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be this card and then UFC 300. Actually, the only thing this has better, in my opinion, 300 is the main event. Sean O'Malley being the main event. I wish he was the main event of 300. But here we are. What a card, like I said. But then we're going to do, I saw that people posting their top 10 college football quarterbacks in the 2000s, of the 2000s. So I am going to have mine. I'm going to do a top 11. You know me, always do the funky list. But yeah, we're going to do a top 11, my top 11 college football quarterbacks of the 2000s. We're going to get into my 15 best NFL free agents and my three ideal landing spots. Not where I really think they should go, but I did look at the cap and where I think these guys could go of teams that could pay. But yeah, we'll get to that. And then we'll finish off course 17.0 mock, post all the combine. No trade first round. So we'll get into that at the end of course. We're going to kick it off with LeBron James, though. Skip out a few minutes if you're a hater. You know, like I said, at this point, for me, people try to make the argument about the debate, the GOAT debate, it makes no sense to me. It ended for me in 2016. I would say I still fought hard to argue it up until when he did the three finals MVPs on three different teams and won his fourth title. That was when I stopped arguing because there was really no point. I'll make jabs and stuff to piss people off on Twitter, of course, but 40,000 points, man. Unfucking believable. Only player now in NBA history to reach 39,000 and 40,000 career points. Just absolute madness. It almost makes you speechless at times. It's tough to comprehend how good he is and how good he still is in year 21 at 39 years old. He's still a top 10, top 5 player in the world. And he's arguably the best player in the world on any given night when he's really feeling it. I mean, like I said, the Lakers will go as far as Anthony Davis and whoever can be that third, fourth guy take them, because LeBron's not going to be able to do it every given night. Not every given night is he going to be able to score 35. You know, is he going to be able to go off and go crazy like he did against the Clippers? Speaking of that, shout out the Clippers. How about a way to send you out of the crypt? Possibly the last game in the crypt between the Lakers and Clippers unless they meet in the playoffs. Get out of the crypto, head to your non-banner. Might be speaking a little too soon. Never know. I still think the Clippers are one of the title contenders. I 100% do. But in year 21, had his biggest fourth quarter comeback ever versus the Clippers. Scored 19 in the fourth, finished with 34. Like I said, he can't do that every night. And I know some people are like, you know, man, LeBron's going to, he doesn't really have it tonight. It's like, yeah, he's in year 21. He's not going to have it every given night. But still, on any given night, like against the Clippers, he can be the best player in the game. He was guarding Kawhi, locking him down. Meanwhile, Kawhi was allowing the switch every time. When AD would screen Kawhi, he would allow Daniel Theis to go guard LeBron, which was just absolutely soft on Kawhi's part. Shocking. But it wasn't even a real screen. AD would literally just walk up, breathe on Kawhi, and Kawhi would switch. You know, LeBron was getting through screens guarding Kawhi. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen every night. Like I said, I think the Lakers have a pretty good team. They're just not consistent. You know, they were evenly matched with the Nuggets until the final three and a half, 4 minutes. The Nuggets ran championship level offense. The Lakers did not, and that's a huge problem for the Lakers against some of these teams. They haven't been able to finish games down the stretch, and that's what they got to figure out. Because the Lakers can beat. Like I said, if you're the Lakers and Warriors, you should be licking your chops at who you could play at the potential 1-2, if you're the 7-8. You could play the Thunder and the Timberwolves, who have no playoff experience. None real. I guess Timberwolves played last year, but no real championship-level experience. No high-level playoff experience, in my opinion. I mean, the Nuggets walked through the Wolves last year. Yeah, I don't think that. I think if you're the Lakers or Warriors, you're eyeballing to get to that 7-8. And that's where you're going to be, because they're probably going to be, sadly, it's probably one of them's going home. Because I have a feeling they're the 9-10 and they're going to play in round one. I think the Lakers match up great with the Warriors. Warriors' inability to guard in the paint and score in the paint is why the Lakers can dominate them, and it's a great matchup for the Lakers. But it's sadly one of those teams going home, but one of those teams is going to be the 8 seed. And I think, you know, that if you're playing Minnesota or OKC, I know that they're young and athletic and fast, but I think you'd much rather play one of them than play the Clippers or the Thunder or Clippers or the Nuggets. I definitely don't want to see the Nuggets. I'm not going to lie and sit here and say, oh, we could beat the Nuggets in a 7-game series. No, I don't think so. We want to be on the opposite side. The dream would be being the 8, playing the Wolves, and not having to see Denver in round 2. Not having to see Denver unless you can make a run, until you can make a run to the conference finals, potentially. Then you might have to see them. I'd much rather like to see the Clippers and the Suns as the 4-5. You see them in round 2. Nuggets is the team for the Lakers. When the Lakers are playing at their, you know, and again, injuries have been a huge problem. People can say what they want. Gabe Vincent was one of our bigger signings. I mean, he was our high mid-level exception. So that's a huge loss. Vanderbilt's injury is huge. Christian Wood's been out. I mean, the Lakers are banged up. If the Lakers are fully healthy going into a first round of the series, I would bank on them beating Minnesota or OKC. Problem is, Denver could still end up being the one, and I think they likely will. And that's a tough matchup. I don't think we can beat the Nuggets. So we'll see. But yeah, LeBron reaching 40K, unbelievable feat. I mean, greatest basketball player of all time. Who knows how, you know, I think he could play at this level for at least 2-3 more years. We'll see how long he wants to do it, though, also. I mean, putting your body through it every year, and it's tough. But yeah, congrats to LeBron, the greatest of all time. And let's move on to my 17.0 Power 16 college basketball ranking as of March 3rd. And yes, we'll have to talk about KU when we get to him, sadly. Number one, UConn remains number one. Top three remains the same. Actually, top four, I think. Yeah, UConn, Houston, Purdue, Tennessee is my top four. Tennessee is unreal. I think Tennessee, they're right now, it's them or UConn are my national title favorites, I think. I can't put them over Purdue and Houston because they have 6 losses and stuff, and they have a couple iffy, you know, the loss at home to South Carolina doesn't look great, but they are a title contender. And they'll be a tough out in March because they can play a bunch of different brands of ball. They can play you in low scoring defensive battle. You saw them against Kentucky. They can play you in high scoring offensive games. Arizona at 5. I don't know what to think about Arizona. I think they're really good. They're inconsistent as well. I don't know what to think about it. I think they're really good, and I think they to me could be the one seed that gets bounced in round 2, or they could be in the national title. That's where I have Arizona's, the gap. I think they could be a second round exit. They could also play for the national title and win the whole thing. North Carolina Duke 6-7. I got Carolina at 6, Duke at 7. They play this week, this coming weekend. Huge game there. Kentucky at 8. You just watch Kentucky. I know their defense, man, but God, they're so tough to guard. Even if you're a good defensive team, they have so many weapons. Iowa State at 9, clearly in my opinion, the second best team in the Big 12. Baylor right there at 3rd, but yeah, Iowa State. Creighton at 10, big win over Marquette, who I have at 11. Baylor at 12, a couple big wins in a row. They were in my next five. They were in my next 5 out last week. They get 2 wins, they're back in. Illinois at 13, Auburn at 14, and in my opinion, the most disappointing team in college basketball this year, my Kansas Jayhawks. 2 losses this week, an awful, awful loss at BYU, and then a road loss at Baylor. Obviously, have been terrible. I think they're, 2-6 on the road? So, terrible on the road. That'll probably be 2-7. They play Houston this coming weekend. Yeah, it's tough. 21-8 at this point in the season, okay, it's probably good for a lot of teams, right? This is an awful year for Kansas. Awful, awful, awful year for the University of Kansas. It's not good. 21-8, 9-7 in the Big 12? Probably going to finish 10-8 in the Big 12 this year. I don't know what Bill Self's worst year in the Big 12 is record-wise, but this has got to be battling it, or it takes the cake. I'd have to look that up, but man, yeah, it's been a rough year. Not what we thought. Injuries, players not really playing to their capabilities. It's tough. You never want to say the season's over, of course, but in my heart it is. I just don't see how this team, they're not athletic. They're not, you know, they don't shoot well from three. They're a slightly above average defensive team. Especially guarding the three, we're not tremendous. Dickinson doesn't really dominate games. Like I said, injuries with McCollar. Yeah, it's been a tough year. You know, Timberlake hasn't played well. El Marco wasn't what I thought he was going to be. Furphy's obviously been the bright spot, hoping he stays, but who knows with this weaker draft class. I think there's a pretty good shot he leaves. You know, we're going to return a lot of guys. That's a good thing. You know, you're probably going to return El Marco, DeJuan, KJ, and Hunter. But, man, we got to get more athletic. We got to get shooting. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting offseason, see what the University of Kansas does. Obviously, like I said, just a real down year for the Jayhawks, 21-8. Probably going to finish, I would guess, 22-9. Probably going to have 10 losses going into the conference tournament because that was my dryer. Probably going to finish with 10. We're going to have 10 losses probably heading into the tournament. Because, you know, I don't see a way where we win the Big 12 tournament, especially where we're going to be placed. You know, we're probably going to be, our path's going to be ridiculously hard. But yeah, it's a down year. It's not fun. I've taken time off watching college basketball just because I was so pissed off about that BYU game. Haven't watched a single college basketball game. I didn't watch one this weekend. Did not watch the Baylor game. Kind of knew it would happen there. I heard we played all right. But again, it's just, you know, it is what it is, man. Seasons come to a close for Kansas, and, you know, so you have those years, but can't happen next year, that's for sure. Gonzaga up to 16. What a run they've had. A big win over St. Mary's on the road. Revenging their home loss to St. Mary's, so that was huge. Next five out, I got Alabama, South Carolina, BYU, USF, and Utah State are my next five out. So, yeah, those are my rankings. And here we go, me and Fee, I gained on them a little. I said I needed to win at least three. I wanted four or five. I got three, though, so I'm only down four. The only problem is it's not the greatest week for trying to find upsets and stuff. I only could find four that I thought, okay, I think these could happen. So that would get me to tie if I can win those four. Monday, March 4th, Texas at Baylor. We're both on Baylor at home. Tuesday, March 5th is a massive day for me. These are two swing games. Purdue at Illinois. I'm taking Purdue. He's got Illinois. Alabama at Florida. I'm taking Alabama. He is taking Florida. So basically that night, yeah, that could set me off. I get two wins there. We go into the weekend because Wednesday, March 6th, we have the same. Both have UConn over Marquette on the road. Both have Tennessee over South Carolina at South Carolina. Both have Iowa State versus BYU, and we both have Michigan State versus Northwestern. Saturday, Kansas at Houston. Both have Houston. Kentucky at Tennessee. We both have Tennessee. Baylor at Tech is one we differ. I got Baylor. He's got Tech. North Carolina at Duke. I was hoping he'd go for the Carolina sweep because I think they will split here. We're both going Duke. And then the other swing game. I have Creighton, he has Villanova. That's at Villanova. So I need all four to push because we're doing kind of like a pool then. We do every year. This year we're going to pick the conference tournaments, see who can win, you know, who can win the most games picking the conference tournaments. And then also we do an NCAA little thing where we go to that March Madness app. We get into a little group by ourselves, see who does better, and we'll see who can win. You got three separate things to win. You got the regular season, the conference tournaments, and the NCAA tournament. You're looking to win two of three. He's in a good spot right now to win the regular season. That means I would need to win both postseason tournaments to get it done. UFC 299. Again, have not looked at the odds. I can't wait to see what the odds are. But we're going to preview the card, my early predictions, and then we'll look at the odds. So previewing the card. Always the preview. We'll start off the prelims. I mean, these prelims are unreal. So the main card is that starting? Okay. So this is the main event of the early prelims. So the very early ones. Michelle Pereira versus Michael Olakashuk at middleweight. What a fight. That's just going to be entertaining as hell. Good matchup. They're gonna scrap. Cannot wait. Kyler Phillips taking a little step up here. He's taking on Pedro Munhoz. Good fight. Be interested to see if that stays standing. Can Phillips, you know, avoid the big shots of Munhoz? We'll see what happens there. Gamrot, RDA. Don't understand this. I know Gamrot just wanted a fight, and RDA's looking for a fight, and why not try to get a big win, I guess. But this is a tough matchup for RDA. It should be all Gamrot, but we'll see what happens. Caitlin Chookagian versus Macy Barber. Macy Barber getting up there for that 125 title. Another big win here, and she's probably in a number one contenders fight, her next fight. And here's a big one. I think the winner of this is probably going to fight Tom Aspinall. Curtis Blaydes and Jalton Almeida. Obviously, if Blaydes wins, he has the win over Aspinall, even though it's via injury. And then Almeida, long winning streak. I think the winner of this is probably going to, you're going to see Aspinall defend that interim belt. And I think it's going to be against the winner of this. The main card. And that was just the prelims. Now, here's the opening of the main card. Peter Yang, Song Yadong. Three-rounder. Yan needs a win. He's on a losing streak. Can he adjust to the three-rounder? He fought five-rounders for so long. Remember, he's kind of one of those guys. He dials it back for a round and a half, download the data. You can't do that in a three-round fight. You got to hit the ground running. And so that's going to be a great fight. Gilbert Burns versus Jack De La Maddalena. Jack De La Maddalena's first like real tough test. Great fight there. Burns with a huge chance to take a lot of momentum against a young prospect like De La Maddalena. And then, I mean, these last three fights are all my favorite, but Kevin Hall and Michael Venom Page. Michael Venom Page making his UFC debut. This should be an unbelievably sick-ass fight. I mean, I'm getting chills right now thinking about this card. This card is unbelievable. That is going to be, it's interesting. Holland's chaos style of striking versus MVP's counter-striking. It's going to be interesting. And the co-main event, five rounds. I mean, this is a, I'm glad Poirier was able to go public and get more money because I think this is a very tough fight for him. I think Benoit St. Denis right now, he's one of, you know, I would say that he's the third best or fourth best behind, the top five, in my opinion, is Islam, Charles, Sarukian, Gaethje, and Benoit St. Denis. I know St. Denis is not going to get a title shot off this because obviously you got Sarukian and Charles Oliveira battling for that. But man, if he wins, he could fight the winner of Holloway Gaethje. Could you imagine him versus Gaethje, him versus Holloway? If Poirier wins, you could set up the trilogy with Gaethje if he beats Holloway, or a rematch with Holloway, who he's beaten. I mean, ton of unbelievable fights after this one, but that fight's going to be sick. In my opinion, it's a very tough fight for Poirier. Poirier gets hit a lot, and St. Denis hits so hard. In the main event, Sean O'Malley, Chito Vera. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a huge mismatch. I love the fight. I like the idea of the rematch and Sean getting that loss back that he has, you know, via injury. I think Sean's going to get it done, of course, but it's going to be, you know, it's awesome. It's a rivalry, a lot of shit talking. I can't wait for that fight. So early predictions. I'm going to go Pereira over Oleksiyczyk via round two knockout. Munhoz over Phillips via decision. Gamrot over RDA via round three knockout. Macy Barber via decision. Almeida over Blaydes via decision. I'm questionable on that one, though. Yan over Song Yadong. Again, a little questionable on that one via decision. I'm going JDM via round two knockout over Gilbert Burns. MVP via decision over Kevin Holland. This one hurts me because I want to give Poirier more of a chance. I just think he gets hit a lot. I'm going to go Benoit St. Denis via round one knockout. My only worry is it is five rounds. What does St. Denis look like if he does not get that finish inside the first two rounds? And then I'm going Sean O'Malley via round two knockout. I want to go submission. For some reason, I could just see a submission. It would be hilarious. But I'm going to go round two knockout. So that's UFC 299. Let's check the odds on UFC 299 odds. Let me grab a quick drink. So, I mean, this has got to be good. Where are the fight odds? I don't know. Where's the thing I usually use? I'm trying to find the one I usually use. It is loading. Here we go. What's up? We'll go off DraftKings here at the front. So then we'll start at the bottom here. Oh, they don't have all of the prelims. Okay, but they got the main prelims and the main card. Okay, so we have to use Chookagian is a plus 165 dog to Barber's minus 200. Kyler Phillips is minus 250 to Pedro Munoz plus 205. Wow. Wow. Gamrot minus 410 to RDA's plus 320. That's not shocking. Blades and Almeida, virtually a pick 'em. Minus 115 for Blades, minus 105 for Almeida. Yadong and Yan, almost a pick 'em. Yan minus 118, Yadong minus 102. De La Maddalena minus 142 to Gilbert Burns plus 120. Kevin Holland minus 135 to MVPs plus 114. Wow, I love MVP as a dog. Poirier, yep, plus 185. To Benoit Saint-Denis minus 225. And Sean O'Malley minus 275 to Marlon Vera's plus 225. Those are your fight odds. Wow. I cannot wait. This is going to be an unbelievable card. UFC 299 and then UFC 300. These cards are so stacked. I mean, here, real quick. We're here talking about UFC. I want to read UFC 300. I know I've probably read it off 1,000 times. UFC 300. Like I said, it didn't have the firepower of Sean O'Malley at the main event, but this card is ridiculous. This card is just also ridiculous. Alex Pereira. So the main card. I'm pretty sure they're just doing... Are they just doing a main card and then one prelim? I think so. So the main card. Alex Pereira, Jamal Hill for the light heavyweight title is the main event. Co-main event, women's strawweight title, Zhang Weili versus Yan Xiaonan. Lightweight fight for the BMF title. Just hate that title, but it's a great fight here. Justin Gaethje, Max Holloway. Charles Oliveira, Armin Sarukian. Light heavyweight bout between Yuri Prochazka and Alexander Rakic. And then Calvin Kattar, Aljamain Sterling as the opener. And that it's a six card. I believe it's going to be a six fight pay-per-view card. The prelims. Bo Nickel returning versus Cody Brundage. Davison Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt. Holly Holm versus the debuting Kayla Harrison. Sadiq Youssef versus Diego Lopez. Jessica Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez. And Bobby Green versus Jim Miller to open up. Jim Miller will be fighting, if he doesn't get hurt, knock on wood, he will have fought at UFC 100, 200, and 300. Insanity. I mean, that card is so good. Like I said, I think the top of it, with O'Malley and even Poirier, Benoit, St. Denis, I'm probably more excited for those two fights than any of the fights on this card, to be honest with you. But it's an unbelievable card. Both cards are tremendous. All right, so let's get into my top 11 college football quarterbacks of the 2000s. So I've probably added a few that were... I've kind of gone with it of playing, how they played, and impact in college football, right? So number 11, Matt Leinart. He was a absolute superstar at USC, and he also was an unbelievable quarterback as well. I did not see him in many top 10s, and I think that's insanity. Number 10, Kellen Moore. You know, that offense at Boise State was electric, and he threw for a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns. Number 9, Colin Klein at Kansas State. I didn't see him mentioned in the top 15. That's crazy to me that he wasn't in the top 15. 8, for me, Colt McCoy. I know Alabama fans, you know, mute. I think Colt McCoy would have won a national title that season if he doesn't get hurt. 7, Baker Mayfield. I don't think he's won. I thought that was a little crazy, but Baker's definitely in there. Deshaun Watson at 6, obviously his highlight, the walk-off touchdown against Alabama in the national title. 5, Johnny Manziel. I mean, that first season at A&M, unbelievable season, and just an absolute superstar in college. 4, Cam Newton, his season at Auburn, unbelievable as well. Absolute superstar in college and won a national title. 3, Joe Burrow. And, you know, obviously Joe turned into a huge star, but it was mainly for the numbers he put up here. 2-1 has always been tough for me. It's always been Vince and Tebow. I'm going to go Vince Young at 2 and Tebow at 1. This is 1A, 1B, though. These are two of my favorites ever. Vince Young, I remember watching as a, you know, 7-year-old and that 6-7-year-old. I do remember it. We were actually at a lake, and I was watching it. A little-ass TV, that Rose Bowl. That's the greatest college football game I ever played, in my opinion. And then Tim Tebow, I mean, come on. 2 national titles. Was unbelievable at Florida. That's my top 11 college football quarterbacks of the 2000s. Don't sleep on the 3, because, you know, Colin Klein, Kellen Moore, Matt Leinart weren't getting a lot of love on some lists. So, shout out to them. So let's get into my top 15 best NFL free agents and my three ideal landing spots. Not where I think that they'll end up. We will get to that at some point, but where I would say their three ideal landing spots be. Chris Jones. Obviously, defense tackle for the Chiefs. In my opinion, the best defense tackle in football. Kansas City, a return is for me, you know, the most ideal. But also two teams that have money and I think that could boost up the interior and be really scary next year. Houston and Detroit. I think both of them would be sick. I do not think Chris Jones is going anywhere, but I think if he were to leave KC, those two teams. Number two, Kirk Cousins. Minnesota would be, obviously, in my opinion, the most ideal to return to. But I would also watch out for Atlanta and Las Vegas. Both teams need quarterbacks. Vegas especially, you know, is a little more pushed back in the draft at 13. Can they get one of those top prospects? Probably not. Atlanta could, but obviously Atlanta's in for Fields as well. But yeah, those would be my three ideal, Minnesota, Atlanta, and Vegas. Legarius Sneed, I do not think he returns to Kansas City. I think it could be a situation where he ends up possibly, I don't know what's going to happen there. Could there be a trade? Could he sign and trade tag? I don't know. But I'm going to go Philly number one. They need a number one corner badly. I mean, Darius Slay is just not, come on, he's not that guy anymore in Bradbury. Jacksonville and also Minnesota. I think both of them could use number one corners. They have some money to spend. So, yeah, those would be my three ideal for Legarius Sneed. Mike Evans, Tampa Bay, 100%. And then Kansas City and Houston. Obviously, Kansas City would need to clear up some room, which they can do. They can definitely clear up some room. And then Houston would just be unreal with Stroud. Saquon Barkley. I went Chargers and he's in Baltimore. And then the team he's already, it's supposedly the team he's most interested in. He's had a lot of conversation with their quarterback, C.J. Stroud, the Houston Texans. And I had him on this. I did this like 4 days ago. I had Houston on the list before that even happened. I just thought it'd be a great pairing. The way he can catch the ball to the backfield as well. Brian Burns, the edge for Carolina. I know there's going to be a lot of repeat positions, so I'm trying to not repeat as many teams on each position. I'm trying to get different teams in there as well. For Burns, I went Chicago, Atlanta, and then obviously returned to Carolina. They didn't trade him, so they'd like to keep him. But Chicago, Atlanta, I think, are two teams that will definitely be in the running for him. Josh Allen, the edge from Jacksonville. Obviously returned to Jacksonville. I'm sure they'd like to keep him. Possibly go to Indianapolis, who needs an edge in the division, or a team like Washington. They would need an edge as well. Obviously, they traded their entire D-line, basically. Christian Wilkins, the D-tackle from Miami. I don't think he's going to return to Miami. I'm going to go Baltimore, Arizona, and Houston. Again, I got Houston in on both D-tackles because I think that's a position they need. And you'll probably see that, you know, you'll probably see how I think about that with their draft pick. Danielle Hunter, return to Minnesota. I'm not sure how much money he's going to demand, though. I went Kansas City and Seattle as well in for Danielle Hunter. Antoine Winfield Jr., do not think he returns to Tampa. I went Green Bay, LA Rams, and the New York Giants as options for Antoine Winfield. Justin Matabuiki, the D-tackle for Baltimore. I went Minnesota, Vegas, and Detroit. Again, I think all three of those teams could shore up their interior. Jalen Johnson, the corner for Chicago. I went Vegas, Arizona, and Cincinnati. They didn't come to a deal. They couldn't find a trade partner they thought was worth it. Chicago. They couldn't come to an agreement on a contract. I think he's probably gone. Vegas and Arizona obviously need help at corner, and I think that's a need for Cincinnati as well. Mike Owonowu, probably the best. Obviously, Tyrone Smith, you know, he could be in here too. I just age-wise, he's definitely the best interior O-lineman in free agency. I went Carolina, Vegas, and Pittsburgh for him. Derrick Henry, Baltimore. Again, I think they're going to be in for one of these running backs for sure. Josh Jacobs will also be out there. Chicago, I think they're going to be in for a running back, one of these good ones. And I think Dallas could be a sneaky one for Derrick Henry. I really do, especially because I don't know if Pollard's going to return. Jonathan Greenyard, the edge out of Houston. I think a return to Houston's definitely on the table. And then I would say a team like Washington or the Rams will be in for Greenyard as well. I think one of those three would be great fits for him. So let's get into, let me get a drink, and then we're going to get into 17.0 mock draft, no trades. Again, it's no trades here. This is going to be, I'm going Fields is traded to Atlanta. because they are the favorites to land him. That's what I'm going with, though, for this draft. But the rest of it's no trades. So number one overall, the Bears. I'm going Caleb Williams, quarterback at USC. It's going to stay this way. I know it can be boring. You see people want to change it up. Again, most of my mock drafts are also what I think more than what I believe will actually happen. I do believe Caleb Williams goes one. But as it gets closer to April 25th, you'll see my mock drafts become more of also what I'm hearing from other people, and that's what also I will do as well. Redskins at two. I'm going Jaden Daniels, quarterback LSU. I've just really fallen in love with him, I'm not going to lie. Over the last week and a half, I've fallen in love with Jaden Daniels. He is now, it's back-to-back mock drafts where he's been number two for me. I don't know what it is, man. I really love his game. I think he's got a really good arm. He's so fast and so quick and athletic. I just love him, and I think he fits a Cliff Kingsbury offense. Patriots, Drake May, though, easy pick here for them, quarterback out of North Carolina. They need a quarterback, and, you know, you're going to see me probably still flip Daniels and May a bunch as we get towards April 25th. Cardinals at four, also an easy selection. Marvin Harrison Jr., wide receiver out of Ohio State. Give Kyler Murray that number one option. Chargers, I flip-flop a lot with them. I go tackle, I go Bowers. Last week was tackle. This week it's back to Brock Bowers, tied in out of Georgia to the Chargers. I just think if he's there, I don't think Harbaugh passes up on him. Giants at six. I'm going to go Malik Nabers, wide receiver LSU. I know some people are talking this could be J.J. McCarthy. This could be a Bo Nix, you know, something like that. But I just think that they're going – they could be a team that trades up, or I think they would take Drake May or Daniels if they slide. I think that there's a gap between Drake May and then McCarthy and Nix. I think there's too big of a gap to where at six, they would take one of the quarterbacks. So Malik Nabers for me. Titans at seven. Joe Alt, offensive tackle at Notre Dame. He had an unreal combine. He's my number one tackle right now, and Titans need a tackle. Got to protect Will Levis. Falcons at eight. Freak, man. All I've done since I haven't watched college basketball is I've watched combine. Dallas Turner's unbelievable. He is unreal, and what a freak, and I think Atlanta goes and gets him here at eight. Nine, Bears. This one's tough. You could go tackle here. You could go edge. I'm just going to go wide receiver Romo Dunes out of Washington, man. I just think he could be special. He could be really special. Jets at 10, still got to be a tackle here. Olu Fashanu out of Penn State. You have to go. If you're going to go win now, you need to make sure you can protect Rodgers. Vikings at 11. Here's the quarterback. J.J. McCarthy, quarterback out of Michigan to the Vikings at 11. And then right after that, Broncos at 12. Bo Nix, quarterback out of Oregon. Raiders, like I said, secondary needs help. Terrion Arnold, cornerback out of Alabama. Saints at 14. This could be O-lineman. This could be D-lineman. I'm going D-line. Jared Versay, edge out of Florida State. He just looks too nasty. Colts at 15. I know people love to go corner and D-line here. I'm actually going to go Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver LSU. I think he's also unbelievable. Seahawks at 16. I'm going to go Chop Robinson, edge out of Penn State. Another guy that had an unreal combine. Jaguars at 17. I'm going J.C. Latham, offensive tackle out of Alabama. Bengals at 18, again, it's probably not going to be a receiver now that they're planning on keeping T. Higgins. It's probably tackle or corner for me, and I'm going corner here. Quinion Mitchell out of Toledo, he looked unreal. And the Rams at 19 go corner as well, Nate Wiggins out of Clemson. Steelers at 20, I'm going Talese Fuaga, the offensive tackle out of Oregon State. They need help at tackle. Dolphins at 21, I love Latu, and I think this is a great spot for him. Good value as well for Miami. I think that four edge guys are all really good. The top four, and then also Trice. But yeah, Latu to the Dolphins at 21. 22, Eagles, they go Cooper DeJean, the defensive back out of Iowa. Again, they need help in the secondary. I think even if they were to get L'Jarius Sneed, they need help in the secondary. Texans, Byron Murphy, the interior D-lineman out of Texas. I've kind of flipped who's number one at interior D-line, and I'm kind of on Byron Murphy now. Cowboys at 24, I'm going Troy Fatanu, offensive lineman out of Washington. Again, he can play all over the place, and the Cowboys, you know, teams, not just the Cowboys, teams in general deal with offensive line injuries, you know, throughout the season. So you can play him at guard, you can play him at tackle. I just love his versatility. Packers at 25, I'm going Tyler Guyton, offensive tackle out of OU. Buccaneers at 26, you know, I think it's, A week and a half ago, I would have said I thought Mike Evans 90% sure he's going to return to Tampa. I think that's dipped a little. He wants to take interviews. So I'm going to go Troy Franklin, wide receiver of Oregon here, to the Buccaneers at 26. Cardinals at 27. Took Marvin Harrison earlier. I think they definitely go defensive side of the ball a lot this draft. I'm going to go Braylon Trice, edge of Washington. Bills at 28. Again, I think a team that needs help with the interior. Jerzon Newton, interior D lineman out of Illinois. 29, the Lions go Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback Alabama. Ravens at 28, or at 30. So this is tough for me. I put both Texas guys in my first round. So hold on. We got Adonai Mitchell, wide receiver of Texas, at 30 of the Ravens. The Niners take Amarius Mims, offensive tackle out of Georgia. And the two-time defending world champs, Kansas City Chiefs, take Xavier Worthy, wide receiver of Texas. Obviously, Worthy broke the record, 4-2-1. I think Adonai still might be a little bit, because of his size and how he ran 4-3-4, I think that he's going to still be a little higher ranked amongst teams than Worthy, who's a smaller guy. But if he gets to 32, Kansas City ain't passing up on Xavier Worthy. Not a chance. Not a chance. So, yeah, there's the mock draft. Yeah, last week, KB and the boys overslept. Not going to lie, it was on me. Not anybody on the boys. That was on me. But everyone is going to go positive this week, I believe. I haven't checked the golf locks, but Zach went plus 4.75. I went plus 3.14. Nick went plus 5.71. Colby's for sure going positive. I got to check Carter's. But yeah, it looks like it was a good week for the boys, which is really nice to see. And we will be back Friday or Saturday morning, or Friday night or Saturday morning. That was on me, though. But yeah, I think that'll do it for this episode. So we'll be back with KB and the boys later this week, early weekend. And then obviously unedited, we'll be back Monday. But again, thank you all for listening. Appreciate the support. Love you all. Peace.